Hey, hey, welcome to the Bitcoin Matrix. I'm your host, Cedric Youngelman. In this episode, I chat with Graham Krizek, the founder and CEO of Voltage Cloud. We break down the Lightning Network speed, scalability, capital efficiency, and the groundbreaking Fidelity Digital Assets Report created in collaboration with Voltage. Graham also shares insights into Lightning's ecosystem, its role in stablecoin integration, the emergence of Taproot assets, and how it's delivering on its promise as a global payment rail. Whether you're a Bitcoiner, a business owner, or just curious about how Lightning is reshaping the financial landscape, this episode is packed with signal. The world's largest Bitcoin conference hits Las Vegas May 27th to 29th at the Venetian Resort. Use code MATRIX for a discount off your tickets at b.tc/conference/2025 or grab the link in the show notes. Join me for an ice cold beer and some fresh and dope content in Vegas. Get your tickets now. I hope you enjoy this rip. If you want to smash by this dip, use my code MATRIX over at river.com and earn up to $100 when you buy Bitcoin on River. If you do want to get in touch with me, it's Cedric@thebitcoinmatrix.com. And now, let's enter the Bitcoin Matrix with Graham.
What is real? How do you define real?
You can't jump into cash. Cash is trash. What do? You get out.
Graham Krizek is the founder and CEO at Voltage Cloud. Graham was previously at Salesforce, NodeSource, and Ikigai Fund. Graham is focused on building the future of money on Bitcoin. Graham Krizek, welcome to the Bitcoin Matrix. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm excited to chat, you know, especially since I've seen this report and all the great work you guys have been doing. You know, the report I'm referring to is the Lightning Network Expanding Bitcoin Use Cases, which was put out by Fidelity Digital Assets recently in collaboration with Voltage. So maybe we could just kind of take it from a really high level and just get into what is the Lightning Network and how long has it been around?
Yeah, great place to start. So, I mean, the Lightning Network is a... it's a layer two solution on top of Bitcoin. So layer two has been kind of as we move along in the crypto industry, words start to make a little bit less meaning. People call like a lot of different things L2s when, you know, maybe it's, I think that means different things to different people. But ultimately what the Lightning Network is it's a network that is made to scale Bitcoin in terms of transaction speed, throughput, efficiency, all of these different things. And so the way that it functions is it leverages Bitcoin's base layer, the layer one, the normal kind of, you know, original Bitcoin. It leverages the security that exists inside of the Bitcoin base layer, and you can do things like opening up channels into the Lightning Network, which essentially lock funds into this L2. And then once you're into this network, you're able to do transactions and have instant settlement and do it for near zero fees and be able to scale transactions to, you know, virtually infinite amounts of transactions per second. So, you know, when you think about Bitcoin on the base layer, there's naturally some trade-offs that need to happen for the security and the network and the consensus and all of these things, which are great for this, you know, this digital global uncensorable money. But it makes it hard for some kind of payments use cases and things like, you know, the 10-minute block times where, you know, you need at least, you know, like 30 minutes or something for a transaction to be like, you know, you're assured that it's not going to be double spent or anything. And then there's also the fees you have to pay to miners. So you could be, if you're sending $5, you might pay $5 in fees, which doesn't make a lot of sense for some of those transactions. And so that was what the Lightning Network was originally created to solve for, is to be able to enable us to do transactions that are, you know, fractions of a cent up into millions of dollars, and do that and have it, you know, complete instantly or, you know, sub-second, and have that for zero fees or very, very low fees. So that's what the Lightning Network was originally created to solve for. It's been around since about, you know, 2018 or so. That was kind of the early days of Lightning when it first was kind of starting to be developed out. You know, now we're in 2025, so it's been around for a while, and we're starting to see a lot of maturity in the last, you know, 12 months or so, which is kind of what we highlight in the report, which we'll, you know, I'm sure we'll get into.
Yeah, of course. I can't wait. There's a lot of signal in this report.
What does Voltage Cloud do on the Lightning Network, and how long has Voltage been working on with the network?
Yeah, so we have been around since 2020, so we're fairly early into the network, we were early participants in the network itself, and then, the company has been around, almost since inception of the Lightning Network itself. And what we do is we basically help companies integrate Lightning to leverage that fast, cheap payment system that is built on Bitcoin. So, to be able to use the Lightning Network, it's far different than using the Bitcoin base layer. It's just a lot different setup with the channel management, the nodes, the connectivity. There's just a lot more considerations that go into actually using the Lightning Network. So that's what we do, is we help any business that wants to integrate Lightning. We handle all of that complexity of the channels, the connectivity, the backups, just like everything that goes into the complexity of actually getting up and running with Lightning. So basically replacing the need for a company to hire a team of people internal to their company to learn how does this all work, and then, maintain it over time. So we make a very simple API service that enables people to really plug in Lightning and reap those benefits without having to do, virtually any, in-house work besides just hooking up to an API. So we're kind of a solution to help make that payments protocol easy to consume and really quick to deploy into your business.
Well, that sounds great. What is your background and maybe rabbit hole story?
Yeah, I mean, my background is in software engineering. So I've been, a software engineer for since like over 10 years now. I got into Bitcoin in about 2012. So that was, fairly early days to Bitcoin itself. And I was fascinated by it from just like this global peer-to-peer payment system that no one can stop. And you can just send from here to France directly. It was just like kind of crazy from the technology of what was possible. And then I basically, kept it as a hobby, something I was interested in, mess with it nights and weekends kind of thing. And I was working for a lot of smaller startups in software space, specifically in kind of infrastructure, public cloud type work. And then I, ultimately went to Salesforce as my most recent job before I started Voltage. So kind of got the large enterprise experience as well. And, one day I kind of had, it was a culmination of one, solving my own problem of, as I was developing projects on top of Bitcoin, there's just so many hurdles of getting started and actually developing on Bitcoin. You had to kind of start from scratch all the time. There's just so much complexity. There's just a lot of work for anyone to go and build an application on top of Bitcoin. And so, when I was building applications, I was like, man, I just wish there was like a cloud provider. You could just like click a button and just have like a node up and running and just be able to completely abstract away all of those considerations, because I just want to make my application. And so that's kind of what I did, is I built, basically that, and I shared it with some friends, and, it got a lot of traction. Like, people found it very useful, very interesting. And so it kind of got to the point where it was like, man, I either need to shut this down because it's becoming, more work than I can sustain on just kind of a part-time, like nights and weekends basis, or I need to turn this into a company and, do this for real. And obviously, there's people that were using it, as well as, I was very interested in, working in Bitcoin full time, actually starting, a company and doing things. So it, obviously, I kind of chose that choice, but it was kind of the culmination of my career and what I was, doing historically, as well as, my hobby, which was Bitcoin, and kind of bringing those together.
Sure. And it seems like the Bitcoin and Lightning space are maturing rapidly. And here we have Fidelity Digital Assets. I mean, a huge institution. How did this report come together? What role did Voltage play in the report?
Yeah, I mean, we've been working kind of with the Fidelity team in a couple of different aspects over the years. But ultimately, we were talking with some folks in their research department, kind of about like the original, idea for the paper was really about the problem that exists in Lightning, and that given it's a peer-to-peer network, there's a lot of privacy components to it. The only public really information you can gather on the Lightning Network is the number of channels on the network, the number of nodes in the network, and the capacity of those public channels. Those are just public channels, basically ones that people are okay talking about or, showing to the world. And so those are really bad metrics to track how well is it doing as far as like, number of payments that are going across it, how fast is it, how cheap is it, what is kind of happening in the actual usage of Lightning. Those metrics don't really tell you anything. And so that's what we wanted to do, is really uncover what is actually Lightning like under the hood? Like, how fast is it? How cheap is it? How many people are using it? Because those are just, there's no other way to get it. When you look at things like Bitcoin Layer 1 or Ethereum or Solana, name the blockchain, all those metrics are completely public on the blockchain. So you can see exactly how many transactions, exactly the fee structures, all those different things. Lightning doesn't have that. So we wanted to uncover that and really showcase, like, here's what is actually happening inside of Lightning and bring that to the surface. So us and Fidelity were aligned in thinking that that was a worthwhile thing to research and provide some information on. And so we collaborated with them. We were able to provide, given that we're like one of the largest providers in the Lightning Network for what we do, we have a lot of, you know, unique data of that behind the scenes information of how fast is it, who is using it, what are the fee rates. And so we wanted to kind of gather our data set and anonymize it and then provide it, you know, into Fidelity and work with them in collaboration on this paper to try and bring these things to light, because there's just no one else that is doing it today.
Yeah, for sure. And so maybe breaking down some more things, like what are channels? How do they work?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So a channel is like, you know, to create a channel, you make an on-chain transaction, which is basically, you know, I don't want to get too far into the weeds, but it's a two of two multi-sig between you and your channel counterparty. So basically you have two people that are saying, hey, let's open up a channel together so we can transact. You both agree to put in some money, or one person puts in money or something. And then once you have that on-chain transaction, those funds are basically locked there. And then you can do off-chain transactions inside of Lightning, which is basically using some advanced cryptography, you know, kind of sending payments back and forth, which creates an eventual transaction that you could one day broadcast back onto the chain and get, you know, the amount of funds, you know, back. And so for an example, you know, if I open a channel to you, I put one Bitcoin in it, you just don't put any, and then we open up a channel, so I have one Bitcoin, you have zero, and then we start transacting, you know, over the years, we just send money back and forth, and all of those payments settle instantly. And then, you know, at the end of it, we're like, cool, let's close this out. I want to put my money into cold storage. I want to, you know, basically move it off of Lightning. And the ending balance is you have half a Bitcoin and I have half a Bitcoin. And so once you close that channel, you know, you each get half a Bitcoin back on chain. So we were able to do, you know, millions of payments inside of this payment channel without ever touching that. We're having basically one transaction on the blockchain of this channel open. So it creates an incredible amount of efficiency in the ways that you can transact.
Sure. And then what are hops at a high level?
Yes. So taking that a step further. So basically, you know, as the network is of the Lightning Network is built of just a big graph of channels. And so that's, you know, a bunch of different people opening up channels into each other. And so a hop inside of Lightning is, you know, you have the concept of, you know, paying me to you, but I can also pay to someone else that I don't have a direct channel with. And the payment is just routed through other people's channels. So a hop is like a stop. If you had a channel with McDonald's and I only had a channel with you, I can still pay to McDonald's, but I just route the payment through your node, and your node would be considered, you know, a hop along that payment. You are routing that transaction on my behalf to get it there. And the Lightning Network can do all that completely trustlessly. So you never, you know, are at risk of funds or like someone stealing your funds or anything like that. So that's what a hop is it's basically leveraging someone else's channels to facilitate the payment. So you can think in a global scale, you can have, you know, you can reach virtually anybody in the network. It might take, you know, six hops to get there. And, you know, maybe that's not the most ideal scenario, but it enables everyone to be connected in a really nice, seamless way without having to have direct channels with every single person that you're transacting with.
Wow. That was a great breakdown. And there are no unique tokens needed here, right? This is all operating on Bitcoin as the native token. What then is like non-custodial yield generation?
Yeah, so you're correct. It's all on Bitcoin. So there's no, you know, no one is creating Lightning with its own token or anything like that. It's all just Bitcoin through and through, which is one of the great advantages of it too. You know, non-custodial yield generation is something that we don't highlight a ton in the report, but we call it out in a specific section. Basically, as we just talked about hops in the network, when you're routing a transaction for someone else, you can charge a fee for that. So you can say, hey, I'll route this transaction for you, but I'm going to charge you 1% for you to use my capital in this channel to be able to facilitate the transaction. And so there is like the option for someone to, you know, you can create a node, deploy a bunch of channels into the network, put a lot of liquidity out there, and then just route transactions for other people and charge a fee for it. So you could put up, you know, hey, I'm going to put one Bitcoin into the Lightning Network. You deploy that through a couple different channels and you're routing transactions, and you can basically, you know, keep all of your funds, but then also earn some fees by routing other people's transactions. So that's kind of a yield potential on top of Bitcoin via channel liquidity and routing fees. And there's even places like Amboss's Magma protocol or product where you can sell channels. There's people that need, you know, channels open to them so they can facilitate transactions, and people will pay for you to open a channel to them. So there's a couple different avenues where you can essentially put money into the Lightning Network and earn a return on it. I think that we're still a little ways out for making it, you know, really, I would say, kind of consumer level, like approachable. I think it's a little advanced today still of like, you know, you need to kind of monitor actively. You need to know what you're doing. You need to deploy your channels into the right spots and things like that. So it's not like a completely hands-off yield product, you know, so far. But I know that there's some people working on making it simpler as we go. So I think that it'll be interesting to watch that space as people develop out products.
And maybe what did you guys learn from this report around sort of channels, like in capital efficiency or, you know, channel size? Are there more channels? Are they just all getting smaller? Like, what are you guys seeing in the market?
Yeah, that's something that we highlight is, you know, there's definitely been a shift in channel structures from the beginning of Lightning into today. You know, in the early days of Lightning, there was far more number of channels that has existed in the network that were all more smaller in size. And we've seen a big shift in the more recent years of creating fewer channels that are just larger in capacity. So the reason for that is it just becomes much more easier from the operational standpoint to have fewer channels, as well as it's more efficient with your capital. You can have higher success rates, especially with larger payments, if you just have fewer larger channels. And so we have seen the shift where there is, you know, early days, it was a lot of people just kind of testing things out, just putting liquidity into the network, just kind of deploying it randomly in a way. And we've seen people start to, you know, realize the efficient way of doing things, the way that things should be done, and actually deploying capital in those ways of, you know, hey, I want to open up just two big channels into like, you know, Kraken and OKX or something, because those are two big exchanges that can, you know, connect into a bunch of other places as well. And so it makes it more efficient with your capital as well as easier from an operations standpoint. So that was one of the big shifts that we called out, is that we're seeing market efficiency growing in the ways that people are deploying capital.
Oh, wow. And then maybe in terms of, you know, how much capital is deployed, I mean, what kind of capacity are we seeing on the Lightning Network?
Yeah, I mean, today, so an important call out even before that is there's the concept of public and private channels inside of Lightning. And so when you're opening up this channel, which is, you know, the on-chain transaction to facilitate these off-chain payments, that channel, you can choose to have it public or private. And what that means is public means that it's basically told every other node in the network is told about this channel. So everyone knows that, hey, I can use this channel to route payments. I can use it, and I know that I can connect to Graham because he has a public channel here. So you can have public channels that are, you know, broadcast that everyone knows about it. You can have the similar structure of a payment that can facilitate payments, but you can mark it as private, which basically means don't tell anybody about it. No one knows that this channel exists, and so I can have it just purely between me and my counterparty. It's not like 100% hidden, like no one could ever find it, but it's just basically like, hey, we're not going to tell anybody about this. And so as we look at the public metrics of channel capacity, right now we see about $500 million of public channel capacity inside of Lightning today. That's a pretty substantial number. And I think that from what we've seen, we see probably an equivalent amount in private channels as well. We think that there's a substantial amount of capital inside of private channels. So if you, let's say they're equal, we were looking at about $1 billion network as it exists today, which is, you know, that's pretty sizable. And then it's also something to call out that this is capital that's not kind of like one-time use of you send a $10 payment and it's like, it's done. You can use the same capital to facilitate payments back and forth all day long across multiple peers. And so that $1 billion could be used to transact trillions of dollars in value, opening up to just a huge amount of possibility. So it's a lot bigger than I think people really even realize today.
What is sort of the relationship between the transaction and the value that's transacted, you know, in terms of if I want to move something on the Lightning Network, how does that work, that ratio?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, so the thing that's transacted inside of Lightning is Satoshi. So, you know, the smallest denomination of like Bitcoin is kind of enforceable on chain. And so when you're transacting in Lightning, you're just, you know, you're sending Satoshis, you're sending fractions of a Bitcoin. So that could be, you know, you could send as little as one Satoshi, which is, you know, fractions of a cent, where you can send up into, you know, multiple Bitcoin in a single payment. And so, you know, the unit is still Satoshis inside of Lightning. And so you're still just transacting with Satoshis at the end of the day, when I say my $500 million number, that's kind of using like, you know, exchange rate and things like that. But ultimately in the Lightning Network, it's all Bitcoin denominated. There are new advancements coming out, like with Taproot Assets, where Tether is coming onto the Lightning Network to enable stablecoin movement on top of Lightning, which I think will be very interesting. So that kind of, it's still kind of Satoshi denominated, but you can have it and you know, being able to hold a Tether balance, which is, you know, a US dollar denominated asset.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to get at. Like, let's say you want to move $1 billion in Tether. How many sats do you move in relation to the amount of Tether or other tangible assets that you're moving using Lightning and Bitcoin as the ledger?
Yeah, with the so with the way that Taproot Assets is made, the you can do basically you could facilitate $1 billion in Tether with like a single Satoshi, being able to move it with the basically the Tether is locked to, you know, the Bitcoin, but you'd still need that $1 billion of Tether. It's not like you can just do it without anything. But the amount of Bitcoin, you don't have to have it matched 1-to-1 with Bitcoin. You don't need to have $1 billion of Tether and $1 billion of Bitcoin. You can use a smaller amount of Bitcoin that is just the what that $1 billion of Tether is locked to. So it can be very efficient in that way if you don't have to have, you know, the same equivalent value of both of them.
Yeah, I find that fascinating. What kind of what are we seeing with transactions and maybe transaction counts on the network?
So yeah, that's something that I don't think in the report we didn't, you know, highlight exactly a specific like number of transactions, but we've seen, you know, transaction volumes growing just in our platform about 400% last year compared to, I guess, 2023 to 2024. And then looking at 22 to 24, we are seeing about a 1200% increase. So we're seeing, you know, huge amounts of, increase in number of transactions across the network. And we also see that in terms of the companies that are getting involved in Lightning. So, you know, in the last year, we've had people like Coinbase, join the network, you know, Bitso, we have like Yellow Card coming online. We have, like Paxful. There's just a huge amount of like larger institutional players that are adding in Lightning, which is kind of driving up the metric as well. So we're seeing a huge amount of increase both in the number of transactions, how many people are using it, and what is it facilitating, as well as these companies that are adopting it, which is kind of, you know, increasing that flywheel.
Oh, wow. And then how would you kind of describe what we've seen in the maturity of speed and maybe on the network and maybe how hops play into that?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're seeing, so let me start with hops first. And the, you know, the more hops that you go through in a payment, the slower it gets naturally. I think if you, it makes a lot of sense in that, you know, you could think about hops, and I think it's described this way in the report, is it's basically stopping at a train station. If I want to get, you know, from you know, the top of New York City to the bottom of New York City, you probably got to take, you know, get off a train, get on a new train and take that one down. So like every stop that you have to take naturally incurs some amount of time addition. So we see that in a number of hops. A six hop payment is going to be slower than a single hop payment. And so hops are very important, and having a strong liquidity strategy is very important so you can minimize the number of hops because everyone wants faster payments. And so when we think about a well-optimized liquidity strategy, we're seeing payments complete in under half of a second. And that is like final settlement. That is enforceable, like on chain. That is no one can take your money. That is 100% like satisfied payment under half of a second. So we think that, and like that's as we highlight in the paper, that's far better than any other payment system in the world. Whether you're looking at things like, you know, Solana, which is a blockchain that's made to be super fast. It's not even, you know, close. It takes like minutes to have like final confirmation of a transaction on Solana. And then and then you think about the fiat terms. I mean, we're talking days in fiat terms for final settlement. So there's nothing in the world that's as fast as this payment protocol. And that's something that, you know, we highlighted in the report. So with a well-optimized liquidity strategy, you can be settling your payments in under half of a second.
Oh, wow. That's super fast. And then, you know, you might have touched on this before, but maybe break it out a little bit. Does the Lightning Network have the same constraints as a blockchain would?
It does not. A couple of reasons. So like when we're thinking about, you know, as we described earlier, you can create a transaction and you can, you know, open up a channel with a single on-chain transaction and transact with that, you know, virtually infinite amounts of times. And so with that, you're no longer constrained to the blockchain's throughput at that point, given that Lightning is peer-to-peer rather than a blockchain global consensus. We're able to scale payments, you know, basically as fast as computers can compute the payments themselves. So we're talking, you know, virtually infinite amounts of scalability potential here. We're just limited about how much computers can we throw at the problem, essentially, at that point. And so Lightning can scale to significant amount of scale, because every transaction that's happening doesn't need the entire world or the entire, you know, consensus to agree on that this is a valid transaction. It just needs you and your counterparty to agree that this is a valid transaction and it's final. So that opens up, you know, huge scalability potential. Again, you know, comparing to any other blockchain, there's nothing else like it that can have that kind of scalability potential.
Yeah, I can see that. And then how does that sort of affect success rate? What kind of success rate are we seeing on the Lightning Network, especially as it's maturing?
Yeah, it's success rate follows a similar trajectory or path as the payment speed. So as you increase hops, your likelihood of having a failed payment increases, because again, you've got to get off one train, get on another. Your chance of missing the next train is increasingly likely as you add more hops into it. So as you add more hops into your payments, the likelihood of it failing increases. But again, for someone that has this well optimized liquidity strategy, which is, you know, things that we provide, you are able to have, you know, above a 99% success rate. So if you are basically, if you can have like a well thought out, well architected liquidity strategy, you can see an incredible, you know, rate of successful payments. And so, yeah, we're seeing, I think we highlight in the report of a 99% success rate, which is, again, I mean, that's, if we were talking about, I think a lot of people equate Lightning to like, oh, maybe it's faster, but like, you know, your payments only work half the time or something like that, which is, you know, not true. We're kind of highlighting that you can have this half second, you know, payment finalization as well as having a more than 99% success rate. So we think that was a very worthwhile thing to highlight as well.
Yeah, no, there's a lot in here that's worth highlighting. Another thing I want to get into is, what do you see as sort of the status of the Lightning ecosystem, and what are the sort of the major verticals in there that are happening?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the Lightning ecosystem is certainly maturing as we have, like, over the last, like, I think 2024 is a pretty big year. We think 25 and beyond is going to be even bigger, but we really kind of came into the scene of being more ready for production. I think the years before that, it was a lot of experimentation and building and just making sure that things, you know, worked out the way that we wanted them to. But ultimately, we're starting to come into a big maturity inside of the Light Network itself, as we've seen in 24 and beyond. And we see that with the companies that I listed earlier. We have people like Kraken, Binance, OKX, these really large players in the crypto ecosystem adopting it. And we're working on some newer integrations with, you know, more traditional crypto adjacent, you know, in between crypto and traditional finance companies that are starting to integrate as well. And so we see it really taking this leap forward in terms of, you know, we're ready for large scale adoption with both the crypto ecosystem and beyond into traditional finance. So I think the Lightning ecosystem itself is doing, you know, a great job of maturing both from like what we're doing at Voltage as well as other players in the network to really, you know, boost the network and to be able to scale to these kinds of levels that, you know, that we've always hoped for. And we're starting to see that happen.
Sure. And then what about sort of like new verticals or like new technology? How do you see that interplaying with Lightning in terms of like, say, Noster or, you know, Podcast 2.0?
Yeah, I think there's, I guess, two sides of the coin of kind of new things on Lightning.
Hey, Bitcoiners, I'm heading to Bitcoin 2025 in Las Vegas from May 27 to May 29th, and you need to be there. This isn't just another conference. It's the ultimate Bitcoin party. Grab your ticket now using promo code MATRIX or at the link in the description. See you in Vegas, freaks. Let's make this one legendary.
I think one, yeah, there's a lot of interest in some of the newer protocols like Noster, Podcasting 2.0, Value for Value, all those things, which I think those are super interesting. And because Lightning has the ability of doing these, you know, fraction of a second or fraction of a cent payments very, very frequently and very, very fast. And so that's something that you would never really be able to do with a credit card or another blockchain or anything like that, of, you know, swiping your credit card or having them charge your credit card once a minute, you know, for 5 cents, just doesn't make a lot of sense. Like, I think that they'd probably shut off your credit card at that point or something. Like, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. And so that is possible on Lightning, which opens up a huge amount of value, as we've seen with the adoption of things like Noster, like people kind of zapping, sending tips for, you know, their posts that people like and things like that. So huge amount of opportunity there. I think similarly for like AI agents, that's definitely on the earlier side. side of kind of adoption and integration, but you know, we people have talked about, you know, AI agents needing to be able to, you know, transact on their own and be able to transact, you know, between agent to agent and do, you know, really fast payments, because naturally AI agents are just computers. They can move, they can compute very, very fast. And so we need a similarly fast payment scheme to keep up with these agents. And there is nothing that is as fast as Lightning. And so that is the perfect recipe of being able to satisfy the requirements of AI agents. And then you're bringing it into Lightning. It's just, you know, and then having it denominated in a Bitcoin, which is, you know, the superior kind of cryptocurrency, just makes, you know, all the sense in the world. And then finally, the other thing I'll mention is just, you know, Taproot Assets, the new protocol that is bringing stablecoins into Lightning. It's obvious that stablecoins are, you know, one of the most popular use cases from the payments perspective in crypto generally. And so we see stablecoins as a huge use case, huge market. It's obvious that there's, you know, people using them around the world. And then if we can couple that experience with Lightning, which is the fastest, cheapest way of moving value, that's a big recipe for success. And it's going to unlock a lot of potential for a lot of people, a lot of new use cases, a lot of new possibilities. And so that's something that we're really excited to work through, is being able to bring stablecoins into Lightning, so we can open up some new borders, new opportunities for the entire ecosystem. And then again, you can then use stablecoins for podcasting 2.0 or whatever it is, any of those applications that we just mentioned. So we're really excited for the convergence of those two.
Yeah, I mean, I think the convergence of stablecoins and Lightning is being completely underestimated from every angle, from business to politics, to, you know, just sort of payment, you know, different ways of doing payments and business to business. What is, I want to talk more about that, but what is ARC?
Yeah, good question. So ARC is a, it's another layer two on top of Bitcoin, if you will. Just kind of depends on how you define a layer two, but it's an additional scaling mechanism that it was created to try and solve similar problems to Lightning, of being able to have you know, really quick payments, instant settlement, and, you know, really cheap fees as well. So basically solving similar payments use cases as Lightning has. They kind of created ARC to solve some of the challenges that exist inside of Lightning, specifically for kind of non-custodial use cases. So, you know, when you're onboarding, say, 10,000 users, you have to do an on-chain transaction for every one of those users to do it non-custodially. Inside of Lightning today, they're trying to solve for some of that initial onboarding, as well as some of the liquidity considerations with channels, being able to have channels with the proper liquidity to the proper person at the right time and things like that. So they're trying to solve similar use cases, but doing it with a different approach, essentially. It's just a different approach, which has some, I'd say, trade-offs in itself. It's a lot more liquidity intensive. You have to put more capital into ARC than you would with a Lightning to get some of these trade-offs, some of the benefits that they're creating there. So it's just another method of scaling Bitcoin. But I think that there's one of the unique things, as we've seen some of these proposals of scaling Bitcoin, whether it's Liquid or ARC or like a state chain or something like that, all of them are talking about becoming Lightning compatible. So that's one of the big considerations with all of these, is all of them are talking about how can we integrate with Lightning. Even BitVM based applications are, well, we understand that Lightning is like this interoperability between all of these different, you know, layer twos. And so that's kind of why we focus on Lightning exclusively, is because we see it having the most potential and still having the most opportunity to increase the payment experience. And so that's kind of ARC in a nutshell. And we see all of them kind of converging around Lightning, which I think is, you know, going to be interesting to see play out in the coming months, years.
A lot of people, you know, some people refer, Michael Saylor has famously referred to Bitcoin as like sort of building on Manhattan or building on steel or something that's immovable. How do you see Lightning in that light? Do you see Lightning as something that's here for the next 100 years or 1,000 years?
Yeah, I do. I see Lightning as, you know, being here for the next, you know, 1,000 years. I think that it's similarly, I think it's similar to Bitcoin in that resiliency aspect. I think that there's two considerations to think through in kind of that regard, of like Lightning is intentionally easier to change, modify, update, you know, all of those things, because it's a layer two. It's not it's peer-to-peer as well. So it's not like we have to get the entire world to agree on this new set of changes that is historically very hard to get people to agree on what is the proper set of changes. And so you can iterate on Lightning much faster just because it's a layer two. You have the security assurances of Bitcoin, but in this layer two, we can just move faster. So we have the ability of iterating in a much different way than you can on on-chain Bitcoin. But then similarly, like the Lightning network, yeah, we could have 90% of the nodes go offline in Lightning, but like, you know, I could still be able to transact with my counterparty. So it's kind of, we don't have to like hold up the entire network as it exists today for it to exist into the year's future. It could come down to just two people using Lightning and they're just still using it to facilitate their transactions. So it's a much different structure than most other things. And so for that reason, I think that it is incredibly resilient as we look into the future.
Yeah. And then maybe also looking maybe current and towards the future, which is maybe the biggest use case or driver of value on the Lightning Network towards Bitcoin? Is it stable coins and these other tangible assets through Taproot? Is it sort of podcasting 2.0 and Noster and very peer-to-peer use cases? Is it, you know, point of sales at Walgreens and Walmart and just using the Lightning Network as the best way to transfer value? Like, or I mean, it could be all three, obviously, but like, what is your take on which is going to be the biggest driver?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a good question. I think that stablecoins will be a big catalyst for the network in general. I think that bringing kind of a new asset class, a lot of the liquidity that goes along with it, that will all be very good for the network. It'll bring a lot of adoption, a lot more capabilities there. I think that it's just continuing to double down on Lightning as a payment system where a lot of that value is captured and where adoption, you know, continues to happen and we start to really scale, because again, it's the best way of moving value. And so we shouldn't ignore that. We need to double down on that actually. And being able to, as we talk with our customers, you know, being able to highlight that if you can do the same amount of, you know, Bitcoin movement that you do today, but you just do it on Lightning instead of on-chain Bitcoin, you can save, you know, millions of dollars a year potentially in on-chain fees alone. And then you bring that out into like, you know, traditional finance where you can look at being able to facilitate their, you know, replace the Visa fees or Swift fees or whatever it is that they're paying. And then the cost, you know, savings is even greater at that point. So there's a lot of, we need to continue to push the boundaries of Lightning being a payment system, not necessarily like creating, hey, we need to create a new protocol or something or a new asset or something like that to make this all function. We just need to continue to push Lightning as the payment rails that make a lot of new things possible, as well as brand new efficiencies that weren't possible before.
Yeah, for sure. And then I'd also love to ask, like, what advice would you have for small business owners, maybe even Bitcoiners who are looking to spin up a podcast or a t-shirt shop, or they sell art, or maybe they sell coffee or something? Like, what would you advise them and how to sort of run their shop and integrate with Bitcoin and Lightning? Do they come to Voltage? What do they do?
Yeah, I mean, like for us as a company, we're very focused kind of B2B, and that could be small business into like enterprise level companies. And so there's a lot of solutions that we have, like BTC, like if you're kind of looking at like a Shopify store or something, we have like a BTC pay server integration that allows you to hook up like Bitcoin payments to your Shopify store and things like that. So I think, you know, we have a decent amount of solutions for that. And there's also, you know, some other providers out there that, you know, that we work very closely with to solve on like kind of the small business use case. So just kind of depends on what you're looking for. But ultimately, you know, we have a big suite of tools and we can satisfy a lot in that regard. And then we're also, you know, expanding on that as we move forward as well. So there's a huge amount of potential, and we have some new things coming in the next month or so that will increasingly help make that really easy for, you know, just kind of a plug and play system where you don't have to understand all the ins and outs of Lightning and everything that's happening there. So we'll have some more things soon that should even help, you know, help that use case even further.
Sure. Maybe can you give us an example of maybe some of the B2B solutions? Is that sort of Binance trying to trade with Coinbase or, you know, another exchange?
Yeah, I mean, like on the higher level, like B2B side, it is working with people like exchanges, payment processors, neobanks, like a suite of different products and services. I mean, we help them integrate Lightning by basically, you know, we're essentially the outsourced Lightning team to these companies. And so we run the infrastructure, we handle the nodes, the liquidity, the channels, like we help with the integration, all of those things. So a customer can come to us and just say, hey, I want Lightning, and have a really seamless experience of just plugging it in and having it run. Rather than, you know, doing it all in house and having to, again, hire out a team, figure out how are you going to set all this infrastructure up, how are you going to maintain it long term. So we are able to just come in and just basically plug in very easily, and then have people start to move their transactions into Lightning to like save the fees, have the better experience, all of those things.
Oh, it's fantastic. And then, you know, do you think that would you say that Lightning is delivering on its promise?
Yes. I mean, that's a great question. I think that that's one that we, you know, again, kind of like the reason for us doing this report with Fidelity is it's like, is it, you know, people on Twitter like tout like, you know, Lightning is the best. It's great. It's going to solve all these problems. And it's like, okay, cool. But like, is it delivering on that promise? And
hey, Bitcoiners, get your sats off your exchange now. This is not a drill. Thea is the world's simplest Bitcoin self-custody solution. With their module, multi-sig vaults, you decide how to hold your keys. Thea is working day in and day out to bring you the most intuitive Bitcoin self-custody solution, regardless of how much you own or what your storage goals are. And they support your favorite hardware. Download Thea now for hassle-free Bitcoin self-custody at thea.us/Cedric. That's thea.us/CEDRIC.
I believe yes. And that's what we highlight in the report is yes, it is delivering on this promise, because you can send $1 million from here to France in half of a second with zero fees. And there's nothing else in the world that enables you to do that. And so we believe that it is it's delivering on that promise, both in that use case as well as many others. So we think that it's delivering on that promise today, and there's a lot more for it to continue to deliver on into the future.
Yeah, it seems like so much of this is happening behind the scenes. I mean, we have so much news in Bitcoin, things like seems like Bitcoin is something's happening every day and things are happening fast. How fast are things happening in the Lightning Network in 2025?
Yeah, I mean, well, and I think that that's because like right now in the U.S., like we're very focused on, you know, new administration. They just did this strategic Bitcoin reserve. There's a lot happening in that regard, which is taking a lot of the light, which is great. Like those are all really good things, and we're making a lot of progress there. And so, but like, I think the one of the reasons is when you think about like the Bitcoin strategic reserve or the crypto stockpile, whatever those things are, that's very much like the use case of that is more of the digital gold version of like, we have, you know, we're holding Bitcoin on the balance sheet of the government, and we're like kind of Fort Knoxing this Bitcoin and things like that. And so that's not like the government using it for payments yet. You know, that's just them holding it. And so that's not necessarily highlighting all the payments use cases. That's why it kind of gets pushed below the fold a little bit. And so there is huge amounts of things happening in Lightning today that we're trying to be more vocal about it here this year, and we'll continue to do that through the year to really highlight what is actually happening. And I mean, there's huge amounts of developments, integrations, all of these different things happening. And right now it's just there's actually so much going on in Bitcoin, which is a great thing. I mean, the things that are happening are very big, important movements. And so it's hard to keep track of all of the different things at once. And so we're going to continue to try and, you know, bring the success of Lightning into the forefront, like this Fidelity report. And so we'll continue to try and do that. And, you know, hopefully there's more Bitcoin noise out there of just more good things happening, which, hey, I'm not going to complain about that by any means. But just trying to highlight that is what we'll work on this year.
Yeah. My final question to you, because it's been an awesome conversation, is what are you most excited about, I guess, going forward? For me, you know, I forget about no long-term capital gains. I would love to see short-term capital gains on Bitcoin, so we could just spend it freely and have a Bitcoin ecosystem here, an internal economy. What are you most excited about in 2025?
I mean, I definitely agree with your sentiment on short-term capital gains. I mean, we just need to be able to just to use it more. I mean, we all want to use it, but it's always just kind of like looming, you know, capital gain situation. So yeah, I definitely agree with that one. And then I think just we're really excited for a couple of things. I think, you know, Tether on Lightning, we're very excited about. Some of our new products that we're, you know, launching soon, we're very excited about. And I think just continuing to bring, we're really pushing to bring Lightning, you know, not just from like this Bitcoin-centric world into more of, you know, broader crypto and then into traditional finance and really pushing the boundaries of what can be done there and starting to integrate with, you know, more traditional finance companies so they can start leveraging this technology and saving money, having better experiences, all those things. Because we think that, you know, there's obviously huge amounts of potential to bring TradFi and like Bitcoin together. And that's what we're really excited about, is to really try and bridge that gap and solve some problems there.
That sounds great. Graham, it's been great getting to know you and Voltage. I'll leave it to you for any parting words and let people know where they can find Voltage.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, thanks for having me on. This has been a great discussion. Anyone can find us at our website is voltage.cloud. Pretty easy to remember. I'm GKRIZEK on Twitter. Our company Twitter is voltage_cloud. So look us up, check out what we do. Definitely reach out if anyone is in need of services or want just to ask more questions about Lightning.
Thank you so much, Graham.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Bitcoin Matrix. If you enjoyed the conversation, don't forget to like, subscribe, and drop a comment below with any questions or thoughts you may have. We'd love to hear from you. You can support the show by checking out our sponsors and affiliate links in the description. It helps keep bringing you great content while connecting you with awesome products that I believe in. Share this episode with your friends, family, or anyone curious about Bitcoin. And let's keep growing this community together. Stay curious, keep stacking, and I'll catch you in the next one.